There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 903, September 13th. 2021. Nasser?
Volare. Man from Perth is Phoenix in Parco Monza. Toto Wolff and Christian Horner are asking the same question. Why am I not surprised? Back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, well, we knew it was going to happen. Toto wants so-called tactical fouls to stop immediately. Does Max have a deep-seated issue with LCH? And, oh yeah, I forgot. Daniel Ricciardo wins his first Grand Prix with McLaren, and he does it before Norris. So I thought that was absolutely outstanding. And of course, I just want to remind our lovely listeners that we need your contributions to keep this program on the servers. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know, you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Molto bene, senor. Molto bene. What a fantastic race. What a great result. And Mr. Rogers, you are my witness. I did say last year, Danny Rick, well, I see a win in his eyes and his smile. In unusual circumstances. And we had those unusual. Actually, the way these two guys are going, it's not unusual by now. But what a great race. What a great win. And, you know, Mr. Rogers, my favorite race for which I wait all season long takes place at my favorite Autodromo. And Moa is smiling from Florida to Fiorano. Now, if this was a NASCAR race, I would be smiling from Tampa to Talladega, but I'll still be smiling. But wait, there's more, Mr. Rogers. This Friday night, Moa will be in Cali, baby. How is the Duke of Dijon doing?
The Duke of Dijon is so pumped up and laughing and crying at the same time. Wow, what a Grand Prix. And of course, we had the sprint race, which I forgot about. So I forgot to watch qualifying on. Oh, it was a mess. But man, what a weekend. And of course, everybody's talking about the accident. Everybody's talking about whose fault it is. And my favorite is Lewis is so happy that the precedent has been set with a three-place grid penalty for Max. We're going to Sochi next, so the excitement is not going to stop. I am telling you, this was a great Grand Prix. I loved every minute of it, except there was not enough Fernando machismo-ness.
Well, speaking of blame game, whose side are you on?
Well, I'm on Max's side, of course.
Of course. Why would that be?
Because I think Lewis Hamilton should have given him a little bit more room. It takes two to tango. And I think that's what Max was trying to say. But in the end, I just couldn't believe it happened. And on the other hand, I don't think the accident gave the race win to Danny Rick. I think Danny had this one wrapped up.
Yeah, you know, but Max and Red Bull, they don't believe in it takes two to tango. They want to do their own foxtrot all season long. And for me, there should not be any penalty unless one driver is pasteurized or victim of a torpedo. But that did not happen in this case. And I agree with you, Lewis should have given him some room. But here is the problem, Mr. Rogers. A, boys will be boys, and stakes are very high this season. LCH wants to break Schumacher's championship record, and who would have thought we would ever see that day? And the other wants to be number one, Agent Orange, and no wonder the rivalry has become so toxic. And I think this will not stop, and we're going to see more of this. My real hope is I want to see the best driver win, whoever it may be, and I really, really do not want to see the final race in Abu Dhabi and the championship decided like it has happened in Suzuka a couple of times. But this day and age, you know, there is penalty for anything and everything. An epic battle for glory should not be decided by a penalty. It's amazing. Lewis comes out of the pit lane and Max is barreling down. And I just knew right there and then that something is going to happen. And the thing is, you know, Lewis knows that if he lets Max go by, he's going to fall more behind in the championship. So that's his motivation to give him some room, but not enough. And Max probably knew very well if he could not pass lap after lap Daniel Ricciardo in a McLaren, he was not going to pass Lewis in a Mercedes. So, and he did not have much to lose. And if you look at it from Max's point of view, I'm not saying or suggesting he's doing it on purpose, but if there is room for one car and he wants to shove in a second car there, in a worst case scenario of both drop out, as it happened this Sunday, he still maintains his championship lead. And this lead is not very big. It can turn around very quickly. Already Lewis has come back from many points. So this, I think, is going to get very intense, very ugly. And I just hope that we don't see any injury or anything like that. But for motor racing, man, it was beautiful. As soon as they were on top of each other, physically, car-wise, I said, who is going to win this race? So there was a lot of excitement, and I'm glad everybody is okay. But Mr. Rogers, I have to say this. As much as I dislike Halo, which I still do in terms of appearance and how it looks, but when it was announced, I just knew that time had come where society needed something like this. You know, we had this unfortunate fatal accident with Justin Wilson, Henry Surtees, and even going back in the early 80s, there was a driver who was a protege of Dr. Marcus Hüttinger, and he was killed because in a Formula 2 race at Hockenheim Ring, Derek Warwick crashed or something happened and his wheel bounced in the air and landed on Hüttinger's helmet and killed him instantly. So time had come for this thing, and it definitely either saved Lewis's life or serious injury. And this could have been very bad. Now, a lot of people are saying that Max was mean and selfish. He walked away, did not even check on Lewis. What's your take on that, Boudreaux?
Well, he didn't check on Lewis really for the simple fact that he could hear Lewis engaging the reverse gear and trying to get back into the race. So I can see that. The second thing, he doesn't like Lewis. He doesn't want to talk to Lewis. He doesn't want to whisper at Lewis. And he was totally pissed. But I have to admit, though, I think Verstappen was really subliminally impressed with the symbolism that was left on the side of the track with his car on top of the Mercedes. That secret symbolism was there, and he loved every minute of it.
Well, you know, obviously this was not a situation where he jumped in the air and Lewis was able to reverse and get going and collect some points. So from that point of view, I agree with you. And I also agree with you that he did not check on him because Lewis was busy trying to reverse. And I'm sure he could see that he was okay. So I don't like to jump on Max just for any angle. I mean, these are fantastic racing talents, and we want them to battle hard and fair. And once in a while, these things will happen. But man, you know, next race is Russia. Mercedes has not been beaten there. Let's see what happens. Okay. Do you think they're going to have more coming together? I mean, it's inevitable.
Well, the best part, and we're not talking about it because there was so many other things to talk about, is Bottas winning the sprint race, really flipping the bird to everybody, enjoying every minute of it, and enjoying his climb up the grid to finish on the podium via a Perez penalty. I thought Bottas is actually going to enjoy the rest of this season a lot more than anybody else, because he's not fighting with Hamilton. He's going to race his own race. He's going to stay out of this filthy, stinky mess. And Max and Hamilton are going to take each other out a couple more times before Toto will have to be hospitalized with acute diarrhea.
Maybe I miss. Did Bottas do a "to whom it may concern" message after winning the sprint race? Oh, so maybe he sent a text message to Toto.
It was a secret between him and I.
But sir, the defining moment of the Grand Prix, main Grand Prix, was the 11-second pit stop from team that normally does the job in less than 2 seconds. And it's amazing how things can go wrong when everything is going your way. And I had a very strong feeling that Max will come out on full Max attack. And one thing is for sure, Mr. Rogers, if you look at the number of wins, number of laps he has led, and wins, he definitely has the package to win this championship. And I would go so far to say the only person who can beat him in the championship this year is Max himself. And he needs to get on the Alain Prost, Niki Lauda mentality, how to lose races but still win the championship. And I know he's a very busy man, but if he can spare 30 seconds, I would say not even 30, maybe 20 seconds, how you can lose a championship. Just watch the opening 20 seconds of the 2007 Brazilian Grand Prix. The guy he's trying to beat in those 20 seconds beat himself to that championship, which would have been the most incredible thing, a rookie world champion. But we're all humans, we make mistakes, so these things happen. And you know, when I saw them coming together to turn one, which is a very, you know, I'm sure you remember back in the days in the 70s, I think up until 80s, the Monza chicane was a series of small S's, but now it's like a, you know, typical Tilke style 90 degree turn right left. And you, we all know opposites attract and then blame each other. So this shouldn't surprise anyone. But sir, like you said, we cannot allow a racing incident to dominate the fantastic race and result we had. The victory for the Honey Badger was very slippery and got the jump on Max at the start, and this was no Covey win. And then teammate Norris got the jump on LCH after he and Max had a meeting of rubber on the opening lap. So these were, Lewis and Max were attracted to each other from the opening lap, not just when they, you know, went into the kitty litter. And I thought sooner or later Max will use DRS and take the lead, and Lewis will do the same on Lando. And I just kept waiting, like I was waiting for someone to pass Petrov in Abu Dhabi many Arabian nights ago. So Alonso and Machismo somehow always come in the conversation. He's so awesome. The red cars were in the top six in the early going, with Leclerc ahead of Sainz Jr. Lap 10, when Lewis was chasing Lando Norris, this was very interesting, man. Lap 10, Martin Brundle made a comment saying, "Lewis cannot afford a risky lunch." And I was thinking, Lewis, Max, one of them will do something. And Max at this time was still chasing the smiling assassin. You know, this was the first time since 2018 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix that Danny Ric was leading a race. Lap 15, Esteban Ocon played squeeze me, please me on Seb and was rewarded with 5 second time penalty. I have to say, and I'm sure you will agree with me, the Alpine livery, blue livery, looks very good on telly, and same cannot be said of Aston Martin. Any thoughts on that, sir?
That's very true. The Alpine looks exquisite in the French Racing Bleu, and with Fernando behind the wheel with his yellow and blue racing helmet. Superb taste and talent.
Indeed. On lap 19, this was impressive. Bottas, your new hero, was 9th after starting 19th, and right behind him was El Machismo. On lap 22, Max was outside the DRS zone and Lewis was still behind the second McLaren. Very, very surprising. Lap 23, race leader Ricciardo came in for new tires and Max was told to keep the pressure. Daniel's pit stop, 2.4 seconds, wasn't a super quick stop for McLaren. You know what they say, be careful what you wish for. Next lap, Max was in total Berezina. Front right was the issue. This was the turning point in the race for championship leader. His challenger was now leading the race after finally passing Norris. LCHN on lap 25. Out he goes in 4.2 seconds. And he also had a slow pit stop. It's interesting, you know, if he had a 3-second stop, which would still be a slow stop, but he would have been outside the clutches of Max. And then, of course, we saw Lando and Max battling down the main straight. Lewis lost the battle to Lando, but going into the first turn, he and Max both got lost in the fog of war. The Red Bull landing on top of the Mercedes roll bar, very lucky escape for Lewis, and the blame game starts. Now, this opened the door for many surprises, and this is where I was very excited. Could be first win for Ricciardo since leaving Red Bull. Maiden win for Norris, which have, either of them would have made me very happy. And come from behind, possible victory for Valtteri. And for those in Parco Monza, a surprise win like 1988. And these things happen in racing, especially at Monza. Lap 30 of 53, racing resumed. Top 5, Ricciardo, Leclerc, Norris, Perez, Sainz. Bottas on the outside looking in. Lap 31, Norris made it a McLaren 1-2. After a forceful pass on Leclerc, and then that really impressed Martin Brundle very much. Next lap, Bottas in top 5 and on track meeting of Haas cars continue. Man, what do you make of this guy, Nikita Mazepin and Mick Schumacher colliding on a regular basis now?
It's pathetic. It's because they're all by themselves back there in last, and I don't even understand what the hell's going on in that team. Haas really should sell this team, and I don't know. I mean, I remember when Haas came out of the box looking pretty sweet, mid-pack, and I know they said it would be a disaster in 21 with 22 and new car rules, but it's ugly back there. It's really smelly.
Yeah, you know, he was such a big, what you call, potty mouth, but now he's lost for words, and the problem is, on one side of the garage, he's got one of the greatest names in the history of motor racing. And on the other hand, a driver whose papa is writing his paycheck. And there's a lot of war of words going on between Gunther Steiner and Nikita Mazepin and Ralf Schumacher. And Mick Schumacher is taking a classy road on this. And Gerhard Berger gave very good advice to Mick Schumacher, which was in the news, that do not get involved in this. Concentrate on job on hand, which is very tough given the package he has. And there's a lot of backlash against Gunther Steiner and also Binotto that he put Mick Schumacher in Haas instead of Sauber Alfa Romeo. But, you know, what can you do? Moving on, lap 34, Bottas moves up to 4th. With 19 laps to go, Bottas had the pace and the package to win. He posted a time 1.3 seconds faster than race leader. Perez was running third, but Checo said, no paso me. Now, late in the race, Bottas became a factor and was, and I thought even the commentators, Crofty and Brundle, were saying that he has a very good chance of winning because he had a very fast car. And I thought Bottas might do what his fellow Finn did, Kimi, start from the back and won in dramatic fashion, but Perez got in the way. And then came the news from the stewards' room for a 5-second penalty on Perez for leaving the track and gaining an unfair gaining an advantage earlier. And that gave podium finish to Bottas, but he still had to pass the Red Bull on the track to attack the papaya cars. Lap 41, Norris asked and was told best for team would be to hold station. It's good that they did that. It was just like the situation, you know, Damon Hill had with Ralf Schumacher when he was on his way to giving Eddie Jordan his first Grand Prix win in the wet at Spa. And I'm sure most of our listeners and familiar members remember that race, what happened there. So with Norris not attacking his teammate, this allowed the Ricciardo Express safe journey to the checkered flag platform. And this is so, so good, you know, for McLaren and McLaren team and followers. First win for the team since 2012 Brazilian Grand Prix, and first 1-2 since the 2010 Canadian Grand Prix. But sir, my favorite part of the race, and this is what I like about Daniel Ricciardo, winning or losing or not finishing, man always has a good humor and a smile on his face. And my favorite part was on the cool down lap when he lifted his visor, looked around and asked, anyone? Very popular win. And I'm very happy that now we will have competition within the McLaren team, a team synonymous with the higher form of competition, which we here at FN Weekly call cage rattling. So, what say you, sir, on Danny's win, McLaren 1-2, and anything and everything apart from what happened between Lewis and Max?
Well, it was a great win for McLaren. McLaren 1-2, and the funny thing that I was in Canada in 2010, Nasser. So, very good for McLaren. Zach Brown, I'm sure, ate a lot of hot dogs that evening.
Now, when you were in Montreal 2010, did you see a shoe in the air?
I did not see a shoe in the air, but I ran into Fernando.
Oh, that's good. That's good. That's good. Anything else that excited you about the race, sir?
Well, I thought it was interesting how Aston Martin really don't... I don't know what's happening with them. That, you know, one day Vettel's on the podium and he was suffering. I guess the infighting... I don't know. The mid-pack is sort of a mess. But I'm telling you, this was such a great race. The excitement and the McLarens really do zippy. And Norris is a Brundle favorite, you know, now that LCH is done, really, and is on his downward career path. Brundle needs a new Brit to love. So now he's got Russell, he's got Norris, and Brundle, I know he's not biased at all, but he does love his Brit drivers. You know, if a Brit delivered Brundle's pizza, and if the driver was a Brit, we'd hear about it.
I like his commentary very much, and it's going to be fantastic next year, you know, with Russell as Lewis's teammate. And but, you know, I got to say this thing. I mean, we still have a lot of races. We have like 8 races, so that's like over 200 points, right? A lot at stake, plus the points for fastest lap. So now with races winding down, Lewis and Max really cannot get into a situation, put them in a situation where they take on risky business, lose out, and the other driver goes on getting 25 points or, you know, something second or third. That will really, really hurt them. So that these people cannot afford. But, you know, if you look at it, Lewis, the way he talks, body language or whatever you want to call it, I think you get the impression this guy knows that something has to happen with his car. Otherwise, this number 8 is slipping away. Number 8 is slipping away race by race, and century of success is becoming harder and harder race by race. And I think both will come in due course of time. At least one of them will happen this year, and I'm very much looking forward to it, no question about it. So we'll see how this thing pans out as we go into Russia and other places. I am told that despite the COVID issues in Tejas, the Austin Grand Prix will go ahead, and I hope to be there. But there is still question marks on a few races, you know, especially Brazil and Mexico. But let's see how it works out. Sir, are you ready for some sprint race action now?
Absolutely.
And you said you missed the sprint race?
No, I didn't miss it. It was only a half hour. How could I miss that? But I missed the qualifying for the sprint race.
Ah, okay. Well, you know, I was expecting Lewis and Max to gang up on beleaguered and out-the-door Bottas, but looks like he passed the butter and porridge to his teammate. Lewis was flying below the radar and well below his high and mighty performance level in the sprint race, and not being able to pass the McLaren of Lando Norris was pretty sad. And drip by drip, he is losing points to the Max factor. LCH was fifth just behind Norris, but the other McLaren driver, Smiling Assassin, finally stabbed a podium finish. So a great weekend for McLaren and Daniel Ricciardo in particular. So Moore is very happy to see that. And Max was able to slot behind Bottas at the start, but I don't think he ever even got into the DRS zone. And, you know, everybody was saying before the race that this Mercedes will have advantage over Red Bull, and that advantage was dusted when Lewis went into the kitty litter with Max. But second in the sprint was very sweet, as race winner Mr. Bottas had an engine change penalty, which meant Max got the pole. And we all know how that ended up. But the tide and luck is turning towards a Dutch champion. But it's not over till it's over. So Mr. Bottas finally gets a win, and well-deserved win. Pole against Max and Lewis is very impressive, and so was the performance for 18 laps. Best part for Bottas was Max slotted in second right at the start, and this prevented Valtteri, this is James' message. The hero of Monza from last year was zero on the opening lap, Pierre Gasly going into the kitty litter after front wing damage caused by playing let's get physical with one of the McLarens. And you know what is interesting, going into the main Grand Prix on Sunday, AlphaTauri was the only team that had scored point in every round. So now they have joined the MLC, Misery Loves Company Club. Mr. Rogers, some people are now getting sour on the sprint race. They don't like this. Your take on it, Senor?
I still like it, as long as it's exciting. And I mean, Monza's a tough place. DRS is not very effective at Monza because the rear wings are already so tiny that you could hardly see when the DRS was activated, meaning that these cars are so trimmed off, they were all pushing the limit in terms of speed down the straights with DRS or no DRS. So Sochi is going to be a little bit different. I think Mercedes will dominate at Sochi. Everybody will still be talking about Max.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting, you know, but we'll see. I still think Max really has the advantage with the package, with his talent, with his age, with his aggression. And, you know, interestingly, there is this website that I go regularly, ItaliaRacing.net. And they basically, was an article today, you know, the question was, can the bully win the championship? So basically they are saying that, and they put some pictures there, how Lewis walked away from a fight in the on the opening lap when Max did not give him much room. And they gave a couple of instances where no matter what, they are saying that, which is true, that Max is flat out all the time without thinking of consequences. So I think, you know, Max need to, his father is hot-headed himself. So maybe he need to sit down with some cool-headed old bloke, maybe have a pastis with Monsieur Alain Prost. And it will be a shame if he does not win this championship, to be honest with you. Because it's not like he's lucking into a race wins or anything like that. And the package he has, this is not the package that Lewis has had and even Rosberg had, which is half a second faster than everybody. Then it will be piece of cake for this guy. His package is as competitive as Lewis's, but he is hustling and making things happen. And case in point as a reference is his teammate. So it will be very sad if he screws up on this championship and finishes second, and we'll see. We'll see. There will be some very sad and long faces in the night in Abu Dhabi, that's for sure. Okay, so now let's take a look at the championship standings, top three. Max still at the top, 226.5 points LCH, second, 221.5, and Bottas, solid third on 141. In the Constructors' Championship, Mercedes, 362.5, Red Bull, second, 344.5, and McLaren, pretty impressive third, 215. And sir, you know I like factoire. Let's take a look at Monza in numbers. It's interestingly, on Sunday, McLaren led more laps than they have in the last 9 years, which is hard to believe. This is McLaren that took Prost, Senna, Hakkinen, Lauda to world championships. Wow. Okay, now, what was interesting, victory here puts McLaren second in gaps between winning races. This was 170 races after they won a race today, on Sunday. Ligier is number one between the 1981 Canadian Grand Prix and the 1996 Monaco Grand Prix. That's 231 races. And that's when Olivier Panis became a one-hit wonder in Monte Carlo. Team with the most wins at Monza, no surprise here, 19 for Ferrari. Now, interestingly, I was looking at the results of all the wins for Ferrari. 1980s was the only decade in which they did not win more than one race. And that race was the one they won was the famous 1988 Italian Grand Prix, which was that season the only race McLaren did not win. And all I can say is, merci beaucoup, Monsieur Jean-Louis Schlesser. In terms of wins by drivers, that belongs, most wins by drivers, that is members of the Club 7. Both Lewis and Schumacher have 5 each. Very impressive. And victory on Sunday was number 8 in the life, fast life and smiling times of Daniel Ricciardo. For American success story at Monza, three times it's been won by American drivers, let's put it this way. 1960 and 61, Phil Hill was the winner for Ferrari. And in 1977, Mario won what is called his spiritual Grand Prix, spiritual home Grand Prix, driving for Mr. Colin Chapman. Sir, are you ready for some Cinzano or Martini and Rossi break?
I am. So why don't we take a quick break, and we'll be back after this brief message.
Nas, introduce the legend.
Well, again, just like Mario Andretti, name is the introduction.
Exactly.
AJ Foyt.
What can you say?
Exactly. First of all, you know, I would like to thank his assistant, Anne Fornoro, for helping me do this interview. She was kind enough to share her experiences with me regarding various drivers who have driven for AJ Foyt over the years. And they range from young American talent, then young American talent, guy I admired very much, Robbie Gordon and Kenny Bragg, to Eddie Cheever. Kenny Bragg also won the Indy 500 for AJ Foyt, ironically, when Robbie Gordon ran out of petrol. AJ, as we all know, is not only a racing legend, but an American sports icon. If you know anything about this man, you will know, understand, and appreciate why they call him Texas Tough. And obviously a huge, huge name worldwide, not just here in the U.S. First man to win Indy 500 4 times, and I asked him which one was the sweetest for him, and it's interesting what his answer was. Other major achievements for AJ Foyt include victories at Daytona 500 and Le Mans 24-hour race in 1967, and of course his teammate then in the Ford GT was Dan Gurney. So I asked him, hey, you're Texas Tough, he's California Cool. How was the chemistry between the two? And I hope our listeners enjoyed this brief conversation, and my thanks again to Ann for helping me make this thing happen.
And another outstanding job, Nas. Another zero on the way.
Okay, I'm here with AJ Foyt, legend of legends. Sir, how are you today, and how excited are you about the reunification of IndyCar racing?
Well, you know, I've always loved IndyCar racing better than any type of racing I ever did. Of course, I love the sprint cars and the midgets too, but it's just part of my life.
Clint Brawner once described you as a tough guy who was waking up on a hot racing day when half the drivers were falling apart. What made you so tough?
Well, I always kept myself in pretty good shape until I quit. Now I've gotten old and fat. But before then, you know, I worked out and I stayed in pretty good shape. I wasn't a drinker or a smoker or nothing like that.
In your book, you talk about, and this is my favorite part in your book, the first time you were leading the Indy 500, you could only think about the announcer. I believe Sid Collins was the name, saying leading the Indy 500 is AJ Foyt of Houston, Texas.
Can you share your thoughts with us, please, of what that meant to you?
Well, it meant everything in the world to me. My dream was this someday hoping to qualify for the Indy 500, much less be able to lead it, much less be able to win it. And that's just every race driver's dream, I think.
You were the first man to win Indy 500 four times. Which one gave you the most satisfaction?
Well, I'd have to say one of the most satisfaction I had at Indy was the first time I ever qualified for the race and then be fortunate enough to win it the first time and naturally be the first man to win it four times. You know, it's just hard to put them. They was all just great, great victories, and everybody in the world knows what the Indy 500 is, so they was all great victories.
You and Dan Gurney, two great American legends and very different personalities, won the Le Mans 24-hour race. How important is that victory in your long list of accomplishments?
Well, you know, for me, Dan Gurney's a great road racer, and for him to have me as a teammate and for us to leave Le Mans, what, 23 and a half hours, and I think we still hold the miles covered for 24 hours more than anybody yet, and we set that record in 1967, and Dan Gurney's been a great friend of mine, and he's a great race driver, so it was a deal that Ford Motor Company teamed us up, and was a very successful team.
Did you enjoy racing an endurance race in Europe?
I really did, because, you know, we're the only American team to ever win it, so, you know, it's a pretty big ego.
Your reputation has always been Texas tough, and Dan is kind of like California cool. How did you guys get along?
We got along great. We never had a crossword that I know of. I still respect Dan. I think he respects me, and we've been friends for many, many years, and Dan's just a good friend of mine.
You race against some great racing drivers, the Andretti's, the Unsers, and Rutherford, and John Cock. Let me ask you a question. If you were a team owner in the era you were racing and all the racing drivers you race against were available, who would you pick as your two drivers?
That would be hard to say because at the time I was there and even before me and after me, there's been so many great drivers, it would have been hard to sit there and say which two you'd want on your team. I know Pernelli Jones was a great race driver and so was Jim Herdebees. And I know Pernelli, the year that he put, I think he had Mario, I think, and Joe Leonard and all that. So it would really be hard for me to just say which two I'd really have.
Looking back on your great career, what are some of the great moments that you cherish most? It doesn't have to be a victory. Any particular races that stand out?
Well, one of the great moments of my racing career was at Kansas City when I won the first midget race, you know, with AAA. So I'd have to say that was one of the great moments in the movements of AJ Foyt.
You know, in the era you raced, the 50s, 60s, racing was so dangerous and a lot of drivers got killed. Was there, especially after you got your first Indy 500 win, did you ever think of quitting the sport because you've had the success and the dreams you had because of the dangers involved?
Well, not really. Normally, a lot of people, after they won Indy, the next couple of races, they either got killed or hurt rare bad, and I never let it enter my mind. I always felt like if the good Lord wanted me to be here, he'd keep me, and if he didn't, he'd take me, and that's the way I always looked at life. You never know. When you're not a permanent fixture, you never know when he's going to come get you. And that's the way I've always lived.
What's a day like in the life of AJ Foyt these days in Houston?
Well, every day I get up and look down to grass. I'm very happy because a lot of my friends are looking up at the grass. So right now, every day you get out of bed and you're still able to move around, it makes you feel how lucky you are.
Finally, how about a message for listeners of F1 Weekly, please?
I'm sorry?
A message for our listeners. We have a worldwide audience.
Well, all I can say, as long as you're healthy, you don't realize how lucky you are until you're real sick or hurt like I have been. So any day you can get up and move and not have too many aches and pains, feel very, very lucky.
Thank you very much.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir, and we will continue our stroll in Parco Monza with Formula 2 action. Race 1 winner was Theo Pourchaire from Francia over Guan Yu Zhu from China and Christian Lundgaard from Denmark. Okay, Race 2 was very spicy with man from Mumbai, Jahan Daruwala, winning his first race of the season. Dutch driver Bent Wiskal was second, Robert Schwartzman from Russia was third. A lot was expected from Robert and Kiwi Marcus Armstrong. Both are part of Ferrari Driver Academy and in second season of F2. but losing steam and proving once again misery loves company. Race 3, which is the main feature event on Sunday, this was won by Oscar Piastri from Melbourne and managed by Mark Webber. He delivered an Aussie uppercut and won the race from pole position. He has now extended his lead in the championship over second place Guan Yu Zhu. Bad boy of motorsports Dan Ticktum was third man on the podium. Now, Mr. Rogers, talking about the second seat at Sauber, there's talk on the street that new kid in Hinwil Town will be Guan Yu Zhu, who will bring millions and millions of dollars from China to a Swiss bank account, and who knows, the money may already be sitting there, and become teammate to Bottas in 2022. And perhaps Bottas will find Peking duck more tasty than porridge. But you know this kid who won the race one, the French driver Theo Pourchaire, he's very young, he's very quick, and some are even calling him the next Alain Prost. And apparently he has a good working relationship with Frederick Vasseur, the boss man at Sauber, and his name is also being linked there. So we will find out, I think, by Sochi, who will be racing in Formula One as teammate to Bottas next season. Okay, sir, MotoGP. Ducati 1-2 in Colli with Paisan Pecco Bagnaia on pole and Jack Miller second. I don't know if you saw this, Mr. Roger, or the highlight, but what a great race. Marc Marquez tried every which way to win the race in Aragon, which is in Viva España, and this included passing the pole sitter seven times in the closing laps, but each time Pecco took back the control pronto. Very, very exciting. You know, Mr. Rogers, hopefully if I'm a full-time member of AARP next season, my goal is to really enjoy and go to a lot of motorsports event, which includes MotoGP. I would love to go to World Rally Championship, you know. This Greek rally Acropolis is so famous, the Kenyan Safari Rally. So we'll see what we can do. And talking of Acropolis Rally, it also took place over the weekend. Toyota first and third. Hyundai second. Winning driver was Kalle Rovanpera from Finlandia. Second was Ott Tanak from Estonia. And your fellow Francais Sebastian Ogier was third. Now some interesting characters have won this event. 1971, Ove Andersson, ex-boss of Toyota F1 team, driving an Alpine Renault. He was the winner. And sir, in 1973 Safari Rally, Ove Andersson was third in that rally, driving a Peugeot, and his co-driver was Monsieur Jean Todt. Amazing, you know, these people have stayed in motorsports for so long. Unfortunately, Ove Andersson passed away after a road accident in South Africa a few years ago. 1982, Mademoiselle Michel Mouton was the winner in an Audi Quattro. And Carlos Sainz Sr. has won this event three times, each time with a different manufacturer, and that being Toyota, Subaru, and Ford. And there is even a Formula One connection going back all the way to the 1958 Acropolis Rally, when it was won by Luigi Villoresi in a Lancia. You know, there was Luigi Villoresi, Gigi Villoresi, you know, great names from the 1920s and 30s. Sir, now we come to the left coast of the USFA IndyCar, final three races on the left coast, starting with Portland on Sunday. Once upon a time in the West, this race was known as G.I. Joe Grand Prix. That sponsorship inventory is long gone. Machismo on this side of the pond, Alex Palou, took pole position and went on to win the race. He's from Spain, of course, and he's doing a great job. Came very close to winning the Indy 500, but his hopes were dashed by Castro Neves. Next weekend is the race at Laguna Seca, and the following weekend, season finale in Long Beach, and more will be at both events. And sir, some sad news. Gordon Spice, name I'm very familiar with, he has passed away at the age of 81. He was a well-known name in British touring cars and also sports cars. and both as a driver and later for his spice engineering. And he made his name driving Ford Capris in British touring cars. You remember the Ford Capri car, sir?
Of course.
It was probably one of the most beautiful designs of all time. Just beautiful. Like the Ford Mustang Mark II, you know, the fastback. Man, I love that design. And Gordon Spice was also a class winner at Le Mans, both as a driver and constructor. And he was suffering from cancer. So our thoughts and condolences to his family and friends. Moving on, sir. He's back. Famous last words of wisdom from Machismo. And, you know, Formula One is trying these new gimmicks and tricks. Now Ferrari is calling for a reverse grid standalone race. All these ideas are being thrown around. And this is what Mr. Alonso had to say. And, you know, when he speaks, we listen. And I quote, "I see football, which normally is the king of sports, and there are so many games that are so boring. And the following week, there is not any drama. There is not any change. There are not suggestions how to change the game to make the goal bigger, to play without a goalkeeper, to improve the show. There are no dramas." End of quote. Well, if there's a guy who should know anything about drama, it's Machismo. But I have to say, I agree with him. You may have noticed, Mr. Rogers, I normally agree with Alonso as long as he's talking pre and post 2007 season. What say you?
Well, that's too bad, because the 2007 season was a great season to learn and reflect on what not to do in a good team. But that's forever lost in the story of history. But yes, Machismo, how wise. He's becoming, who's our favorite guy in baseball? Well, I'm thinking about the gentleman who used to say it's deja vu all over again. Is it Yogi Berra?
You tell me.
Yogi Berra. It is my hero. And Fernando will become the Yogi Berra of Formula One as he grows older and wiser.
Yeah. Well, you know, next time Ron Dennis comes to a Grand Prix race, you can present Alonso with a baseball bat. He might hit a home run.
Bravo.
Okay, sir, let me ask your favorite question. Next round is in Russia, Sochi Grand Prix. Then it goes to Igora Drive in St. Petersburg. Who do you think is going to win there?
Well, at this game, we don't know, because anything could happen. Engines are being changed. Apparently, I was wrong. Mercedes is in the same shape now, with everybody going towards the fourth motor. They'll be penalized. And don't forget, Max gets a grid penalty. So Max, even if he gets pole, can't get pole. So Hamilton goes into Sochi very positive and reflecting on the accident, knowing that Max was turned wrong, served a penalty. Hamilton is going to feel empowered. He'll get pole. P2 for Bottas, because Bottas has nothing else to do but perform now. He doesn't have to worry about anything. And that surprisingly actually clears the air. So no, Sochi is going to continue to be Stalingrad that we love and adore.
Yeah, and you know, most likely because he has a 3-grid penalty, Red Bull will take the engine penalty also, and we'll see. But both Lewis and Max, they have a package that even if they take a 10-grid or whatever penalty is dished out, they will make it to the, most likely to the podium.
That's very true, depending on the circuit. Engine penalties, it's the back of the grid or you start from the pit lane. So if Max starts from the back of the grid in Sochi, that would be a pretty devastating pill to swallow. But do you want to swallow the pill now or later? You got to really think about it, and we'll see what happens. And I still think grid penalties and accidents will determine the champion.
Well, I think Sochi will be very good. I'm going to tell you why. Nikita Mazepin will be racing on home ground, and he will be totally excited, and he will try to break out of the siege of Stalingrad, if not Leningrad, and cause a yellow, and that will give Max and Red Bull the opportunity they need to easily get on the podium. This guy is out to get Lewis Hamilton, let me tell you that.
I agree. I think it's going to be ugly in 2022. Especially if something happens and Max does not win this Grand Prix or this championship, there's going to be a lot of bitterness in the Verstappen family, at Red Bull. Verstappen could become a little out of control, and thinking that Red Bull, that's their savior to get a world championship. But once again, he's pretty hot-headed. I agree with you. I think if he stopped and had a pastis with Le Professeur, it would definitely help things out.
And, you know, I'm going to tell you, Mr. Rogers, one thing. I'm no expert or psychoanalysis, but you know what really, really pisses me off? And I've seen this with several drivers with whom I've had association for many, many years. And I, even when you don't have much association, you see that. And it's so obvious when you go on their Facebook page and on their website and in their press releases, especially when they are coming through the ranks. You know, these people who are around them, most of them are family and friends. They put so much sort of like hot hair in their head. Oh, you are going to be in Formula One. Oh, dude, you're a champion. It's just like, you know, when they talk to boxer before a bout. And I think then, you know, if you, you know, like this guy, Mark Priestley, who used to work for McLaren, and he said about Heikki Kovalainen and Lewis that if you get beaten by your teammate again and again and again, pretty soon subconsciously you're going to accept that I cannot beat this guy. So when you have a kid who is extremely talented, which Max is, he is hot-headed, we have seen that, just ask Ocon, he really needs to, I would say, calm down and go for the championship. You know, he does not have to win every race to win this championship. A little less conversation, maybe he should do a little less action and a little more conversation with some Swami and get this thing tied up. But you know, next year they are changing all these new car regulations, so we don't know who will have the upper hand. But there is a school of thought out there, and quite a few people are enrolled in this, who think and say that Max will never become a world champion just because he's so aggressive. And I'm staying away from this school right now because, you know, he has 7 years of experience in Formula One, which is quite a bit of experience to learn a few things. And he's only 23. And the talent that he is, let me just tell you something. When Lewis goes out and if Ferrari can get the car where they can win races on a regular basis, some top team sooner or later, if Red Bull cannot provide him with a championship winning car, which they have this season, this is up to him. But there is a chance in the next 5 years, if some car has a head and shoulder advantage like Senna in 88 and Lewis, you know, recently, and Alain Prost in 1993, these things happen, then I can see this guy still winning a championship. And I hope he does, because I would hate to see a supremely talented driver. I mean, just look what a mess Jean Alesi made of his career.
Exactly.
Okay, sir, Monza was pretty brutal for the championship contenders, so we have invited Signor Salvatore Adamo to the Palatial Studios to describe the evening for McLaren Red Bull teams. Take it away, Mr. Adamo. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Adamo. Thank you, Nasser. Keep up the good work. Another outstanding job. And we will see you in Sochi.
Well, hopefully I'll see you in Santa Cruz. Come down and we'll grab some breakfast.
That's right. You owe me breakfast.
Yes, you have to come down to Santa Cruz, though.
Ah, los caballeros. Okay, I'll make sure my horse is saddled up and ready to go.
Hee-haw. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.